Welcome to Don's Diorama. It's Sunday 19th of May 2013, and joining me on a virtual sofa tonight is special guest Holland van den Nieuwenhof. He's a producer and writer of a cutting-edge documentary film on Opal Eye, Oklahoma City 1995, and he's also a radio show host of Radio Free Oklahoma. Now, his website is www.anoblelie.com. where you can watch the trailer for his film, and also you can purchase a high-quality DVD of it as well. The film is the result of 2 years of in-depth research and evidence gathering, which exposes why the bombings were a false flag. 6 years prior to 9/11, on April the 19th, 1995, a bomb went off on the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in downtown Oklahoma City, killing 168, including 19 children under the age of 6, and injuring more than 680. The blast was so intense that it destroyed or damaged 324 buildings within a 16-block radius, destroyed or burned 86 cars, and shattered glass in 258 nearby buildings. The bomb was estimated to have cost at least $652 million worth of damage. And Opal Eye is the only up-to-date film about the Oklahoma bombings. And I'm just going to read this directly from the DVD blurb. The text states that an Opal Eye is the Oklahoma City bombing of 1995 is the first feature-length documentary to examine the Oklahoma City bombing in the light of new and suppressed evidence that proves the official story to be false and that Timothy McVeigh was not the sole perpetrator on that terrible April 19th, 1995. A few other reviews say a myth or untruth knowingly told by the elite to maintain social harmony or the social position of the elite. That's for the Republic Plato. The 1995 bombing in Oklahoma City was a direct blow to the heart of America. So that's anyway, without further ado, welcome to the show, Holland. How are you?
Hello, Don. Thank you for having me on.
Very welcome. It's great to have you on. So I was just thinking, could we go back to the very beginning? What's your story, basically? How did it all begin for you? And can you tell us a bit about who you are, your background, history, where you came from, and briefly, how the idea for the film came about and what got you to start your own radio show?
Yes. Well, I grew up in Oklahoma. And when the Oklahoma City bombing happened in 1995, I was actually in the U.S. Marine Corps at the time and really wasn't able to pay up a whole lot of attention to what was going on, but I was still picking up divergent threads of the story that were being suppressed by the mainstream media. When I got out in 1999 and a couple years afterwards and I moved back to Oklahoma, I started doing my own homework and research on the bombing because I'd kind of missed what had happened. And I saw that there was a large body of evidence that threw the official story in a doubtful light. And trying to come to grips with that and doing my own research, I came to collaborate with the Oklahoma Bombing Investigation Committee, chaired by State Representative Charles Key of Oklahoma, who was looking into the bombing and trying to figure out what actually happened, because he knew he was being lied to by the very government that he was working for. And as we did our research and compiled our findings, we realized that this story needed to get out to the people. A book had already been written, the final report of the Oklahoma Bombing Investigation Committee, but that came out just a couple weeks before 9/11. So it was largely ignored. There was actually much bigger things on the radar, obviously. And as years went by, we decided to make another effort to try to get the word out there, and we felt that a film documentary was the best way to reach the masses with this body of evidence. So we gathered the talent and resources, and it took about 2 to 3 years from initiation to final release, and we released in just 2 years ago, I believe. And a little less than 2 years, and to wide acclaim, it's been it's the only modern documentary on Oklahoma City bombing, and it, in essence, it destroys the official story of the bombing, that Tim McVeigh did not act alone, that there were more bombs inside the building, that there was prior knowledge on the behalf of the U.S. government, there was an undercover operation going on, utilizing Tim McVeigh and others unknown, and the end result was the bombing that killed 168 people here in Oklahoma.
Thanks, Holland. We'll go into a wee bit more depth about that as we go through the interview. Now, so can we just get straight into it? First of all, we're saying, where did the title for the film come from and what does it mean?
Well, the title was come up with by our producer and director, James Lane, and A Noble Lie is from Plato's Republic. And a noble lie is a myth or untruth told by the elite to preserve social harmony or the position and or the position of that elite. Basically, a lie told for the greater good. And that's what we believe lies at the heart of the Oklahoma City bombing. It was a lie told to the people because the government felt they could not handle the truth.
Okay, thanks. Now, a noble lie exposes, obviously, the Oklahoma bombings as a false flag. And can you tell us, firstly, what a false flag is and why it's so important to be aware of, first, what they are and their purpose?
Well, a false flag attack is an attack perpetuated by a government against its own assets or people and blamed on an enemy in order to effectuate a political agenda or something like that. The problem with the Oklahoma City bombing is that it was a false flag attack, but that doesn't mean every person involved in the cover-up knows that a covert arm of the U.S. government decided to blow up the federal building in Oklahoma City. They utilized an existing undercover operation. We have documentation on this. I have interviewed people who were part of this operation, and this is how they got the first responders and the investigators and police officers on the scene to go along with the cover-up, by telling them that it was a botched undercover operation and that to preserve operational security and the security of their assets, they had to effectuate a cover-up. And that is how they cover up these deep state events. It's not that every person involved in these cover-ups is covering up a false flag attack. They're operating on a need-to-know basis, and they're covering up what they need to know.
Okay. Right, before we go properly into the false flag thing, can you first outline, for those listening not so familiar with the events of the Oklahoma bombing, what the official version and timeline of events is, or was, should I say?
Yeah. The official story is that Timothy McVeigh, a disgruntled U.S. Army veteran of the first Gulf War, became radicalized by the actions of the federal government at Waco and Ruby Ridge. Waco, the conflagration at Waco, where the Branch Davidian compound was burned to the ground 2 years to the day before the Oklahoma City bombing, was blamed as the motive as why Tim McVeigh decided to blow up a federal building and kill 168 innocent people. That is the official story, and that he received almost no help except for one accomplice, Harry Nichols, who was not at the scene that day. He was in Kansas. There's no disputing that. The official story can't place him in Oklahoma. He was in Kansas, an adjoining state. And that Harry Nichols helped him construct the bomb, which McVeigh drove to the building and in a Ryder moving truck and blew up outside the building. Now, almost every aspect of this official story is false. Tim McVeigh did receive help from other accomplices. Tim McVeigh was not the mastermind of this plot, and the bomb that blew up inside that truck was not the sole cause of destruction to that building. There were definitively bombs placed inside the building. Eyewitness accounts verify that. Scientific examination of the evidence verifies that. And earthquake readings that read the tremors in the ground recorded two explosions.
Okay, so after hearing the official version of events, which you've just talked about there, did you realise right away that there was a cover-up going on, and if not, when and what led you to establish this, and also what was the trigger that led you to get together with other people to investigate the events and actually make your documentary film, blowing wide open the holes in the official story? What was your main motivations for getting this film out?
The main motivation is that this was my hometown, Oklahoma City. I grew up here. I'm an Okie. And although I was away when it happened, I felt that whoever perpetuated that terrorist act needed to be held accountable. 168 people were killed in my town. And seeing that the government was not holding all of those responsible accountable, I started looking into it. And there's a large number of like-minded people here in Oklahoma who are aware of the truth and know that they're being lied to. A lot of people, I mean, most of our witnesses in the film, all of them are eyewitnesses, survivors, police officers on the scene. We're not just, consulting internet hacks. We're going to the sources here, and they know they're being lied to. and it wasn't, nothing was being done about it. And if we cannot see the guilty parties in the docket answering questions, I don't think that will ever happen. This government will never hold itself accountable for its actions. At least we can reclaim history for the truth. If we cannot see justice, we can at least proclaim the truth, and that's what we do with this movie.
Okay. So you identified at least 10 different pieces of evidence, maybe even more than that, but to back it being a false flag event. Now, if I name them one at a time, could you maybe provide some detail into them?
Each
piece of evidence. Okay, thanks. So like the John Doe number 2 and other accomplices.
Yes. The problem with the eyewitness accounts of the first day of the bombing is that, and what was reported in the media for about a week after the bombing, was that Tim McVeigh was indeed accompanied by someone else in that moving truck that he parked outside the federal building. Everyone who saw McVeigh that morning, I mean everyone, saw him with someone else. In fact, the one person that the prosecution in the trial of McVeigh produced to place McVeigh in Oklahoma City, under cross-examination, she admitted that she saw McVeigh with another person. This could all be cleared up if they simply released the videotapes that ringed this federal building, which they never have. They released a few tapes, but they all cut off a minute before the bombing. And the excuse is that, well, all the tapes were being changed at the same time. Well, that's ridiculous. Obviously, that is untrue. And that case is still being pursued in federal courts by Jesse Trintidue, whose brother was murdered in federal custody, a case that we highlight in the Oklahoma City bombing. He is trying to find out what exactly happened, why his brother was murdered, and what the federal government is hiding about what happened at Oklahoma City. So Tim McVeigh was accompanied by other people. This was reported in the news, and then it was suddenly dropped, and it was never mentioned again.
Okay. So another one is why the ATF were missing.
Say again?
Why was the ATF able missing?
Yes. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms is a federal agency that was involved with the Waco disaster, which is also a reason why they say McVeigh decided to target the federal building. The office of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms was in there. At the federal building, there's a lot of federal offices in there. The ATF was one of those. The problem with that story is that the office of the ATF was completely empty that day. All the agents had been tipped off by their pagers to not come into work. And we know this to be true because the ATF agents themselves, who were not in the need to know, told several first responders on the scene as they were pulling people out. The first responders asked them, did you lose anyone? Where's your offices? They said, don't worry, we weren't in there. We were tipped by our pagers to not come in to work. So there was prior knowledge on behalf of some organs of the federal government, not all of them, the people in the building who worked for other federal agencies, the children in that daycare center certainly received no warning, but the BATF did. So the question is, why did they receive a warning and act on it, not tell anyone else in the building, and how come they deny it to this day?
Okay, so a lot to think about there. How about the other bombs going off?
Yes, the official story is that one bomb went off inside that truck that was composed of varying amounts. First it was 1,200 pounds, then up to 8,000 pounds, and they never really settled on a official tally for how large that bomb was, composed of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil. Listeners in the UK will know that ANFO, or ammonium nitrate and fuel oil, was often used by the IRA in Northern Ireland and Great Britain during the Troubles there. In fact, the British Secret Service sent several agents to Oklahoma City to investigate or to help in the investigation of the bombing because they were saying that it was an ANFO bomb. There's several problems with that. We know it was not an ANFO bomb because it did not have the telltale signatures of an ANFO bomb. There was not the nitric gas cloud that would have been produced. Had there been an ANFO bomb in that truck, the first responders, all of them, would have succumbed to the fumes. That was several thousand pounds of ANFO. That would have been a gas cloud lingering over downtown Oklahoma City for quite a while, depending on the wind. There were no reports of people being injured by seared lungs, which is the usual result of exposure to this gas cloud. There were no reports of a gas cloud. There was no gas cloud. So it was not an info bomb, and there were bombs inside the building because the damage to the Alpha P. Mura Federal Building is anomalous. It's not symmetric to the crater in the ground. It's offset. You have a small crater in the ground in the street, and the major damage to the building is offset from that crater, went almost all the way through to the other side of the building, but it doesn't line up with the crater. We also know from the examination of the wreckage by Benton K. Parton, the Air Force general in charge of testing ordnance for the U.S. Air Force, he conducted a bomb damage analysis of the damage at Oklahoma City and concluded that there were other bombs inside the building placed at key supporting columns. And in fact, the Air Force themselves, based on General Parton's input, conducted a mock-up test of the Oklahoma City bombing, and their own report concluded that there were bombs inside the building. So for the government to stick to the story that the truck bomb is the sole cause of destruction is a lie and tells you that they're covering something up.
Yeah, and also, was there not mention about the rubble falling the opposite way or something from if it had just been like the truck bomb?
Yeah, there were explosives inside the building, and there was wreckage from inside the building across the street that would have had to transport itself against the blast wave from the truck bomb. Now, the earthquake analysis tools at the University of Oklahoma recorded two different explosions 8 to 10 seconds apart. Now, this makes sense with the wreckage. All the data indicates, and let me make this clear, all the data indicates multiple explosions. The only thing that says it wasn't is the United States government.
So there is, right, we've went through the more bombs found in the building, and what about the informants told the government that the Mura building was going to be bombed?
Yes, there were multiple undercover operations going on. There was an undercover operation at Elohim City, which is a neo-Nazi compound to this day, still exists in eastern Oklahoma. In fact, the founder of that community was an FBI informant. We have paper on this. He was making $400 a month for the FBI to provide information on everyone who was coming through his little settlement there in the hills of eastern Oklahoma. In fact, the BATF, Carol Howe, they sent an informant to Elohim City, and she identified Tim McVeigh and others as being involved in the bombing. This was ignored.
I'd like to see that was unbelievable, unfortunately. No. How about the experts refuting the official story?
Yes, everyone who is involved refutes the official story. We know that there were bombs inside the building, and that's just not based on the scientific evidence. We also have eyewitness accounts of that also. We have Jane Graham interviewed in The Noble Lie. She worked inside the federal building. She is an outstanding eyewitness. She has testified before the United States Congress before on labor issues because she was vice president of the Federal Employees Union prior to the bombing. So she's an excellent witness. A couple days before the bombing, she showed up to work, and there was a three-man crew inside the parking garage underneath the federal building. They had blocks of gray putty, which they were attaching to columns and stringing with wire. Jane Graham was a civilian. She had no idea what plastic explosive looks like. She figured they might have been phone company people, but they were suspicious enough that she retained the memory of the incident clearly in her head. After the bombing, obviously she realized that she possessed knowledge that the government needed to know, and she picked out of a lineup given by a police officer the people who were stringing the Mura building with plastic explosive. And one of those men that she picked out was Andreas Strassmeier, a German national who was living at Elohim City, that neo-Nazi compound, and who was also a government informant. We know this to be true from the FBI's own teletypes, that he was an informant providing information. This informant was in the Mura building planting explosives. The same informant prior to the bombing had been named by Carol Howe, the ATF informant, as preaching to the choir in Elohim City to bomb federal buildings and assassinate government officials. Now, he is placed in the building with explosives, and that's the bombing. He's flown out of the country, and he's never questioned. He's called once by the prosecutor's office, through his attorney, and he answered some questions, and he let him, and well, they didn't let him go. They never had him. And that was the conclusion of the investigation in Andrea Strassmeyer. I've also interviewed another first responder on the scene who overheard ATF agents saying that they had swabbed the interior columns for bomb residue and had tested positive for C4 plastic explosives. Debunked all of the evidence shows that the official story is false.
There just seems to be so many similarities, especially with the missing tapes, like with this 9/11 and 7/7, and how conveniently the, you know, like, for example, 7/7, how conveniently all the cameras stopped working at the same time, and, you know, it's just, it's very, very suspicious. How about the foreknowledge?
Yes, the foreknowledge of the bombing is voluminous. Like I said, the ATF was investigating Tim McVeigh and Andrea Strassmeyer. They did not know that Strassmeyer was working for the FBI. They had knowledge. The ATF displayed foreknowledge. There were warnings passed to the Oklahoma City Police Department and to other agencies, the U.S. Marshal's Office. I have interviewed myself, a former player in racial politics, the former chief of security for Aryan Nations in the U.S., a neo-Nazi organization. This man, Johnny Bangeter, is no longer involved with racial politics. He has repudiated it, and he's involved in human rights struggles now. But at the time of the bombing, he was involved with the Aryan Nations. And prior to the bombing, he had been approached by a man who was trying to talk him into bombing a federal building with an ANFO bomb in a Ryder truck. The same script that played out in Oklahoma City, but the ATF was pitching the script before the bombing. This man who was trying to talk Johnny Bangeter into committing this bombing, Johnny refused. He wanted nothing to do with it. Well, after the bombing, this man disappeared, and then he later gets a letter from this man who's sitting in jail who says, hey, Johnny, I'm sorry, I was trying to get you involved with that caper, but the ATF had me in trouble over federal firearms violations, automatic weapons and explosives, and they were wanting me to pitch this script to people in the neo-Nazi right. And no one was biting. And apparently someone did bite and made it happen. But we know that the ATF was trying to talk members of the neo-Nazi right into committing an atrocity with an ANFO bomb and a moving truck at a federal building, and that this same script played out in Oklahoma City.
You just can't dream it up, can you, really? What was the bomb squad at the federal courthouse before the bombing?
Yes, there were several eyewitness accounts, dozens of eyewitness accounts, that 2 hours before the bombing happened at 9 a.m., 7 a.m. that morning, the Oklahoma County bomb squad was parked across the street from the federal building. There were bomb-sniffing dogs searching the bushes of the federal courthouse next to the federal building and the adjoining area, and people inside the Murrah building, the federal building, say that the bomb squad was searching inside the federal building before the bombing. Apparently, someone somewhere got some kind of warning and was trying to figure out if it was true, and they could not find anything, and then 2 hours later, the federal building blew up.
So there was an extra leg found, wasn't there?
An extra leg, yes. The official tally of the death toll at Oklahoma City is 168. That doesn't include three unborn children, and including a pregnant woman who was across the street who was killed. But there was an extra leg found in the rubble that did not match any of the victims. Now, in fact, the chief pathologist from Northern Ireland testified on the stand at McVeigh's trial that in all the years of the trouble that he had dealt with, the thousands of bombings and the thousands of autopsies that he had performed, the bombing victims, there was never an unknown victim. They were able to account for anyone, but in this ANFO bombing in Oklahoma City, there apparently is an unknown victim. This leg did not match any of the victims as testified to by the Oklahoma State Medical Examiner on the stand. This leg was clad in a camouflage trouser with a combat boot. No other body parts were found that did not match anyone else. So that indicates whoever this leg belonged to was close enough to the bomb for his body to be almost completely destroyed except for the leg, and just the leg is hanging around, and no one knows or is willing to admit who it belongs to.
Yeah, I was just wondering there, though, if the bombs were so, if the explosion was so big, and obviously several different ones, the damage to people's bodies and some people just be totally obliterated and not then be very hard to kind of match up.
Yeah, yeah, but, there's no, everyone who was missing that day is accounted for, and their bodies are accounted for. Okay. Everyone's legs are accounted for, and now we have an extra leg, and it's anomalous, and no one's willing to address it.
Okay, yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Now, you did touch on earlier, briefly, the surveillance tapes. You want to go into a little bit more depth about them just now?
Yes, this is a federal building and in downtown Oklahoma City, and there were other government buildings nearby, several, and obviously all the businesses all around the area. Everyone had video surveillance cameras for security purposes. But for some reason, the federal government will not release these tapes that will disprove all the eyewitness testimony that say that McVeigh was not alone, disprove all the evidence that say that the truck bomb was the sole cause of destruction. But they will not release these tapes. I mean, we have to see footage of 9/11 all the time, 3,000 people dying in those towers, but they will not show what happened in Oklahoma City. Now, we know they're lying about what they know is on the tapes because we have Secret Service, United States Secret Service documents. One of these documents is written, and they're actually watching one of the videotapes that's never been released, and they describe what's happening. And they say that just a couple minutes before the explosion, two suspects exited the truck. Plural. So the contention that McVeigh acted alone is betrayed by their own words and their own documents. The thing is, there is no real official story of the Oklahoma City bombing. There's no coherent story. There's several different cover stories given out. They all conflict with one another. The only thing consistent is that the government is lying about it.
Okay, I'm just wondering, are you aware of Hoppe Heidelberg, who was a grand juror on the indictment for the Oklahoma bombings, or trying to bring an indictment?
Yes.
Now, they were thrown off the jury. Can you shed any light on to what happened and how that came about?
Yes. We interviewed Hoppe Heidelberg in A Noble Lie. And Hoppe Heidelberg was on the already sitting grand jury. The grand juries in Oklahoma sit for 6 months, two grand juries a year. They sit for 6 months. There's a little bit of overlap, but they handle all the federal indictments coming in. And there's a saying here in the U.S. that a federal prosecutor could indict a ham sandwich if he wanted to, if the grand jury is basically rubber stamping everything. That's usually how it goes. But Hoppe Heidelberg was an intelligent man. He's aware that the government was corrupt, and he knew that he was being lied to. And when he requested evidence, and as a grand juror, according to the federal grand juror handbook, a grand juror is allowed to request evidence, subpoena witnesses, which he did, explosive evidence, explosive experts. He wanted to subpoena the architect of the building, the construction manager to make sure that it was built to spec. He wanted the videotapes. He requested all of this evidence. They could not refuse this to him because it is fully within his right as a grand juror to subpoena evidence, because the grand jury here in the United States was set up in the early days not just to indict criminals but to protect people from unlawful prosecution. So they are allowed to subpoena and view evidence of their choosing. And he decided to do that within his power. They could not produce this evidence because they did not want it disproven within the grand jury process. So they simply dismissed him without cause. They didn't tell him why. They just dismissed him. And shortly thereafter, he was subjected to a campaign of harassment and death threats by the government. FBI agents came to the grand juror's house, displayed firearms in their waistband, trying to intimidate him while he's on the grand jury. That was even before he was dismissed. They were trying to intimidate him. And when they finally decided that they could not intimidate Hoppe Heidelberg, they dismissed him from the grand jury. So, I mean, that is the individual heroes standing up, the witnesses, the survivors who saw things that are not agreeing with the official story. Those are the heroes of this event, because despite the intimidation, despite the censorship, and despite being disregarded by the media, they still tell the truth about what they saw because they know the truth matters, especially when justice has yet to be sought in all these deaths.
Yeah, they seem to go to extraordinary lengths to cover things up. Did you experience any difficulties in getting eyewitnesses to give their accounts of what happened?
Well, yes. I mean, I've talked to hundreds of witnesses and people over the years related to this bombing, gone on research trips to the nooks and crannies of this country, tracking down neo-Nazis who may have been involved. Some of those scenarios became a little scary. And plenty of people were afraid to tell us what they knew because they had been harassed and intimidated by the government, because they had been told, shut up, because they had been told, or even if they were unaware that they had, what they had seen was contrary to the official story. I talked to people who had knowledge. They had no idea that what they had seen was contrary to the official story. They had no clue because they weren't told by the police they were telling it to. They filed their reports, and they were forgotten, and they moved on. I stumbled across these reports through the FOIA actions of several researchers, went to go track these people down, and they verified, yes, that what they saw was indeed true, and that they were never followed up with by the government because it did not fit the official story. Basically, anything that did not fit whatever official story they were pushing at the time was excluded from mass consumption.
There's been many reports about the ATF eyewitnesses being killed, and also was the, can you maybe shed a bit of light on that, and also was the rescue impeded in any way?
Yes, we interview in an Oklahoma lie, Oklahoma City Police Officer Don Browning. Don Browning is a veteran of the United States Marine Corps. He was also an Oklahoma City Police Officer at the time. He was with the Canine Rescue Unit, and he was one of the first responders. He reports and testifies in an Oklahoma lie that at one point the first responders were held back at gunpoint by FBI and U.S. Marshals, told that no further rescue would take place. This is within minutes of the bombing. There are still victims bleeding to death inside the building. And the reason given was, according to the FBI agent, that there were documents so important to the federal government that until they were recovered, there would be no further rescue. We also have eyewitness accounts of federal agents stepping over victims who are bleeding and needing of aid to pick up documents. So whatever was in the building had to be recovered, and it was so important to the government that they allowed people to die.
That is just disgusting beyond belief. It really is. So how did the media coverage of Oklahoma compare, say, for example, to the media coverage of the World Trade Center attack? What were the differences in the mainstream media's coverage of Oklahoma and 9/11?
It was similar and different in many ways. It was similar in the fact that the mainstream media failed to follow up on these leads and these tips and these this information that was coming out that was contrary to the official story. But it was different in the effect that with 9/11, there was already a prearranged cover story that they were rolling out. They already knew what they were going to tell the people. In Oklahoma City, there were several days where there was a lot of confusion about what they were going to tell the people about what had happened. So the local media here in Oklahoma was reporting the truth. They were reporting it, John Doe number two. They were reporting other bombs found in the building, unexploded bombs verified by other eyewitnesses in the building. They were reporting all of this. They were reporting on the sightings of John Doe number two, like I said. But once the official story became concrete, most of the media outlets started to toe the line with the federal government, except for one local news station here in Oklahoma City. KFOR continued to track down these leads that were anomalous to the official story for a year after the bombing, and a lot of good reporting was out of there, despite all of the criticism from the other media outlets. Well, about a year after the bombing, that station was purchased by the New York Times Broadcasting Company. The programming manager was fired, the lead reporter on the Oklahoma City case was let go, and all of the reporting that was contrary to the official story vanished.
Yeah. So what do you think was the main motivation for it to be a false flag then?
Well, the main motivation, obviously, well, maybe not obviously, we can look at the agenda that was rolled out after the bombing, see who benefited, see what political agenda was effectuated, because with a false flag attack, there's always a political agenda in the wing. So what political agenda was rolling out after the bombing? It was demonizing dissent in the United States. Now, in the mid-1990s in the U.S., there was a lot of dissent. against the federal government. I became politically awake or aware during that time, so I was seeing it firsthand. There was a lot of problems with the federal government. They were overreaching their bounds. They were trampling on the U.S. Constitution. The tragedy of Waco, many blamed on the U.S. government. Maybe they had done it on purpose, setting that fire that killed 87 people, including 24 children 2 years to the day before the bombing. And there was a strong anti-government militia movement in this country. Of course, after the bombing, this movement was demonized. Dissent against the government was demonized. The new terrorism laws were passed, much like after 9/11 when the Patriot Act was passed in this country. So the purpose of the false flag attack was exactly what happened, to demonize dissent, cement trust and control in the U.S. federal government, to pass new laws restricting dissent, and to silence the critics.
So if the Oklahoma bombing was a terrorist attack reaping revenge for the slaughter of the Branch Davidians at Waco, why did all ATF or FBI agents escape injury, and why were all badge-carrying federal agents missing from work at 9 o'clock on a weekday morning?
We don't know why they were told, I guess, to spare agents. In an Oval Eye, we actually have a videotape of one agent. This agent had, after the bombing, was telling a story that he had actually been inside his office at the time of the bombing. He was knocked unconscious, and then after he came to, he kicked through several walls and was able to seek aid and get rescued. The problem is no one reports this man inside the building at that time. After the bombing, he was sporting a bandage on one of his hands, saying that it injured his hand breaking through a wall. But we have videotape footage of that same agent the morning of the bombing, minutes after the bombing. He is standing outside the building. He has an ATF raid jacket on. He is not covered in Sheetrock dust. He is not, disheveled in any way like every other victim of the bombing. And in fact, he is shaking hands with his injured hand with one agent and holding a water bottle with the other. So obviously that agent was lying about his whole heroic story, was involved in the cover-up, and proves once again that they're lying.
Okay, thank you. Just before we finish up, do you have any final words, Holland, and any website links or extra information you'd like to share?
Well, yes. Obviously, you can go to NobleLie.com, check out the movie, and can make your purchase. You can also watch it for free on YouTube at the Free Mind Films channel. Just look up on YouTube, Oklahoma City, look up A Noble Lie, Oklahoma City 1995, a full movie, and you can watch it for free if you don't want to make your purchase, and just get the information out there. See for yourself what this government is capable of, because that wasn't just a one-time event. No one was held accountable. Therefore, they will continue to effectuate these operations. We see that with 9/11. We see that with other events. And now, with the Oklahoma City bombing, people know to what extent the government is willing to lie about an event like that, about mass murder. If they're willing to lie about that, they're willing to lie about anything else.
Holland, I'd like to thank you very much for joining me on the show tonight. It's particularly explosive information that you have shared with us. And if you haven't, as Paula just mentioned, if you haven't already watched the film, I cannot recommend this film enough. It's an excellent film full of really good information, exposing this whole thing, blowing it wide open. Coming up in the next hour is a Dark Side show. Now, Holland, you're welcome to stay on with us if you wish.
Well, Don, I'd like to, but I live in Oklahoma, and the tornado sirens just started going off. And I may have to seek cover. I'm not sure what's going on.
No problem, Holland. The phone lines will be open as usual in the next hour anyway, and it's up to you if you want to stay for a little while or if you have to go, that's fine.